probably the craziest interview ever done in UFO space. Not done by me, Ross Coulthart. You, I don't know if you know what I'm about to say.
I have a feeling. I think there's definitely been an incentive to create a smokescreen and a perception that anything that's operating in the skies that's going against what we understand to be like the kind of like standard aerospace and aeronautical abilities is an alien vehicle. And I think that's a very convenient smokescreen. Stop that. New York Times, all the way up to now, is trying to create this incentivization that it's actually all alien. We can't explain all of this. We don't know what this is. We don't have this in our arsenal. We don't have this in our weapon systems. And I disagree with that entirely. I think they absolutely do have it.
I'm here with Jay Anderson, Project Unity. I've been so excited to do this for years, man.
Like, it's just... It's good to see
you. It's good to see you in person, man.
In the flesh. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You've done some OG epic UFO-based interviews I want to cover. More recently, you've done some amazing kind of alternative. It's dumb that we have to call it alternative. It's just archaeological, ancient civilization, stuff. But for now, it's alternative. It will be the mainstream.
It's getting there.
It's getting
piece
there.
By piece. Scan by scan.
That's right. So I really want to talk to you about what the fuck is under the Egyptian pyramid.
You tell me, right? Like, none of us actually know, but it's looking interesting.
It looks fascinating. Like, yeah. I feel like you're as close as anyone to the research team doing it. You were just with them at the Cosmic Summit. So thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it. Most welcome, bro.
It's a real pleasure to be out in Texas for the first time. Like I said to you, after this, I want to try and find a place to shoot a few guns.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is another person here that will be revealed in time.
They will be revealed.
It's a special reveal.
Special reveal. Yeah. And I have a feeling this person knows where to shoot guns in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, well, maybe you can show me a place or two, brother.
But before we get started, I'm going to pull a Sean Ryan here.
Oh, okay.
And give you a special gift. This is our
American Alchemy Cowboy themed shirt.
Shirt.
Hey.
There you go.
That is sweet.
Pretty cool, right?
Let's have a look at that. I love it, bro. This will be me on my next podcast. I'll be wearing it.
Dude. Aw.
Representing and respecting.
Let's go.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you, of course. So, yeah, man, I want to start with the UFO stuff because I feel like you did some really important early work on this topic, and people need to watch some of these interviews. You interviewed Oki Shannon, who was a lead project manager at Los Alamos.
Yeah, yeah.
But also was doing research with Hal Puthoff and the sort of vigilante capacity.
Part of the working group kind of thing going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you're with a guy like that, because that was a great interview.
Yeah.
When you're with him offline, do you get the sense that he knows more than he can say and that... Like, because is there a sense that, like, there is a reverse engineering program and he just can't talk about it and there's some sort of undetectable dark matter there? Or is there a sense that, oh, you've kind of fallen prey to, like, the public narrative around UFOs and actually it's kind of this other stuff that we don't quite understand? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you get
the
distinction.
Oh, absolutely. Because, like, for me, especially kind of coming through this subject over the last few years, I will admit that a lot of it starts to feel like campfire stories, just sometimes campfire stories with a TSSCI clearance attached to it. So it's like, you know,
sure,
like,
yeah,
that sounds amazing. But again, where's the evidence? Where's the actual, like, hard data for it? It's just a very interesting story from, no doubt, an interesting individual with an interesting background. But, you know, someone like Oki Shannon, I mean, he said to me a few things. He said that their working group in Los Alamos National Labs, it was kind of like an informal group because he was part of the, what was it, the theoretical physics group in the Pentagon, the ATP. I forgot the actual name
of it. Yeah, we should give the context for the audience, the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group.
That's the one,
and it's with Oki Shannon and Hal
John
Puthoff.
John Alexander, Hal Puthoff, yeah.
Like, Stubblebine.
Yeah.
All these guys who are kind of deep, you know, esoteric alternative physics.
Right.
But also kind of, you know, they have real credentials.
I mean,
Army INSCOM, Stubblebine, John Alexander. I don't know. I guess maybe Army INSCOM as well, but maybe some DOE ties too. You know, a lot of like very intense kind of insidery types studying alternative propulsion.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, so you've got like this element where he was clearly involved in like maybe a formal, but certainly an informal part of his work was to look at the UFO subject. And he kind of looked at it as, he said that they concluded that they're interdimensional objects coming down into a lower dimensional plane. He attributed to the book Flatland, where he said, you know, the idea of this spherical object coming down into a two-dimensional plane, you're only going to see a cross-section, a shadow of what it truly is. And he's of the opinion that that describes a lot of the UFO phenomenon. But again, like, you know, it's like very interesting ideas, interesting stories, interesting claims, but I've yet to see any hardcore evidence either way for any of these things. And I think that's the issue that I've come to in the UFO subject specifically. And maybe that's what's promoted me to slightly transition out of it, although I do think that ancient history has a lot of connections and correlations to the UFO field. Again, collecting these stories over time is really interesting, but I just want further validation of what's actually going on with this stuff. You
know
what I mean?
Man. It gives you brain damage. It's a huge headache. And there is truthfully, it's a far cry. A saucer in a hangar and some ephemeral interdimensional object are two very different things.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if these things are being, you know, conflated, or if there are the thing is, I was somewhat skeptical of the crash narrative actually. Mm. And then I just visited a crash site, and what there, I don't know if you know who Scott and Suzanne Ramsey are, but they're the deepest on the Aztec crash in 1948.
Oh, the Aztec crash.
I thought that would be an interesting one to investigate, you know, as opposed to Roswell, which is obviously extremely popular and in the lore.
Right.
And I came in expecting to be like, this is the bullshit element of the UFO story. And honestly, dude, I came out being like, I think there's stuff to the crash.
So what was it that piqued your interest the most?
We went to the crash site, and this is all filmed. The trees were like splayed out where a craft seemed to have been drugged through the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
This couple, Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, have spent $600,000. And they're the most salt of the earth, like good people you'll ever meet. Like, there's no like,
I think I did catch a Richard Dolan interview of them back in the day.
They're very close with Dolan. Yeah. And so spending that much time with them, then realizing that the story, like how this story came out, was this guy Silas Newton. They claimed that he was part of some like doodlebug hoax or whatever.
But Silas Newton was worth $20 million at the time.
Yeah,
which
adjusts
for inflation. Like, it's like that guy doesn't need to hustle people on a doodlebug oil thing.
No,
like, he was very successful.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. And then you have these FBI files on Silas Newton and Gebauer going way back to the, I think, the 30s or something. And they're totally redacted.
So I don't know. You know, I didn't come out being like, I'm 100% sure, but it was eye opening for me.
Yeah.
I was like,
man,
maybe there are these.
I struggle with like the crashing of hyper advanced alien vehicles, maybe the disengaging through some sort of exotic scalar wave weapon system that we have or something like that, but I tend to lean towards that these are prototypes of our own work that are crashing and, you know, like happening all over the world, especially since it started kicking off, like you said, Roswell, 1940s, 50s, Cold War, exotic energy, mm-hmm. T. Townsend Brown, like all of these things happening, you know, because you've covered so much of that. Mm-hmm. Fantastic work on T. Townsend Brown, by the way.
Thank you, man.
Love that deep dive.
I figure it's a hedge, right? It's like if you're deep on the anti-gravity and then you're deep on the, you know, the UFO stuff.
Yeah.
Like one of them has to be right. The anti-gravity stuff would explain, right?
right. I think there's definitely been an incentive to create a smokescreen and a perception that anything that's operating in the skies that's going against what we understand to be like the kind of like standard aerospace and aeronautical abilities is an alien vehicle. And I think that's a very convenient smokescreen. And I do think that, you know, a lot of the stuff, a lot of the talking points in this kind of 2017 to present day narrative from, like, you know, New York Times all the way up to now is trying to create this incentivization that it's actually all alien. We can't explain all of this. We don't know what this is. We don't have this in our arsenal. We don't have this in our weapon systems. And I disagree with that entirely. I think they absolutely do have it. So I think there's probably like, I mean, I'm convinced that there is some form of non-human intelligence interface, whether that's dimensional and kind of bleeding in, or maybe even terrestrial to this planet and hidden, or actually a, you know, space visitor from another planet. I'm open to all of that, but I think that there is definitely a case to be argued for a massive smokescreen of classified exotic energy.
Yeah, I agree with you fully. One of the other, probably the craziest interview ever done in UFO space, not done by me, Ross Coulthart. You, I don't know if you know what I'm about to say.
I have a feeling.
Bobby Ray Inman, who was...
highest level dude I've ever spoken to in my life.
Highest
kind of
level
terrifying.
Dude, anybody
kind of terrifying.
Can ever speak to. And they're like, that guy ran the government.
I have no idea why he agreed to do an interview.
That was remarkable. So he was head of the NSA.
He was head of NSA. He was
deputy director of the CIA.
Yeah, CIA, DIA. I think the
Federal Reserve Branch in Dallas.
Yeah,
SAIC.
SAIC.
Yeah, like, that SAIC.
He was the head of everything.
Of everything.
Man. Like, you know, like the head honcho.
If there is a legacy UFO program, that
bro
guy
knows
has his
it. Like, dude is like, well, yeah, like one of my guys is like a veteran in the U.S. Navy. Was like, he's definitely like MJ-12. Like, you know, he's,
yeah, he has to. If there is an MJ-12,
that
guy's on
it.
That's right.
Right.
And I love the interview. The whole thing's hilarious because like you're doing this like autobiographical thing for the first like 45 minutes.
Him up, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end, you go, so you know,
tell me about the aliens.
Yeah. You go, this UFO researcher Bob Oxler called you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in fairness, we absolutely smoothed it out afterwards. But he did feel a little bit like he was brought in under false pretense.
Okay.
When I was doing some background research on you, I came across a fascinating little segment from a documentary. It was a segment of an interview that you had in 1989 with a man called Bob Exler. Do you remember speaking to a man called Bob Exler?
Yes, I do. Yeah, and
During this conversation, he asked you whether you believed that the recovered vehicles would ever be made available for technical research outside of the military circles. And your response to this was, 10 years ago, I would have said no, but whether time has evolved and they're beginning to become more open on it, it's a possibility. So obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like you're suggesting here that you're aware of retrieved UFOs being studied by the military.
No, the answer was no. It would not. Absolutely, we're no retrieved UFOs. I have high confidence.
Do you anticipate that any of the recovered vehicles would ever be become available for technological research outside of the military circles?
Again, I honestly don't know. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, the answer would have been no.
Yeah.
Whether time has evolved, they're beginning to become more open on it. Is a possibility.
No, I mean, like, I told him that I wanted to talk about UFOs, but I mean, again, the way that came about was another buddy of mine who was a U.S. Navy veteran had an old number for him. And so we called that number and it went straight to voicemail. And so we left a voice message just saying, well, he left a voice message because it's easier for someone like that who's obviously got connection to him to speak on my behalf and just say, like, there's this guy who's really interested in talking to you. And basically, like a week went by and we had nothing. And then my buddy was like, hey, he's messaged back. And it turns out that this phone number we had for him was an old phone that was like locked in a drawer. He just decided to check it on a whim. He hadn't checked it in years.
No way.
Yeah, I know, right? And he saw this voice message and decided to respond.
That's a crazy synchronicity.
That's why at that point I was like, this man's going to say the truth. Like, you know, this feels like it's
meant
aligned.
To be.
Like, this is meant to be. Like, this is crazy. So I was like, you know, he was the only guest who asked, and it doesn't surprise me for a pre-approved list of questions and talking points, like, sure. What are we going to go through? So I was like, you know, obviously I need to mention the fact that I want to talk about UFOs, but I started off with obviously, like, you know, like his career background and geopolitics and national security of today and what he sees. And then, you know, at the bottom, I was like, and I want to bring up the, you know, 2017 UAP discussion and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I did say that, but I don't think he was expecting me to know about Bob Exler and actually have receipts and be ready to kind of come at him with, like, you know, challenges. And I have to say that, you know, with all due respect to the Admiral, you can see the body language shift quite profoundly when we move on to UFOs.
Oh, yeah.
You can see he's relaxed, he's talking, he's enjoying kind of reflecting on his career and everything, which is an incredible career. I mean, my God, this guy is just like, you know, up at the absolute apex.
Mm-hmm.
But then once we get into UFOs, even when I'm just asking the question, man, he starts getting tight. He starts bringing his body in. And when I asked him that first question, he was just like, no, absolutely not. No UFOs. None at all. Like, no way. And then a few times during the interview, which I think must have been him misspeaking, but it was kind of strange, where he kept saying, I am extremely confident that there is no other life in our galaxy.
I have a high level of confidence that within our galaxy, there is no other living life.
And I was like, you know, solar system would make sense, but he said galaxy like 3 times.
How can you be confident?
And also at the end of this, he said something along the lines of, I don't think I've given you what you were looking for, but I hope you'll listen very carefully to what I've said to you. So I have listened back and I'm trying to figure out what it was that you might have been like
basically
putting in, but this whole thing where it was like there's no life in the galaxy. It's like,
we should send our audience off now to decode this interview.
Right.
The message, Jay, if you find any sort of meta messages.
Yeah, because I'm fascinated in what he was trying to say. I feel like he was trying to put something down that I haven't picked up yet. So
Yeah,
who knows?
Well, that, I mean,
that was wild. Yeah.
So wild. So wild. But the Bob Boxer call is so just crazy and interesting because you hear Bobby Rue Inman say, maybe at some point this will come out, like, but not now.
And
he's speaking so casually.
Yeah. And there's a few like news clips of Exler going on the news and saying like, someone said to him, you know, do you think that this could just be fraudulent and fake? And he's like, well, Admiral Bobby Ray Inman convinced me that these were flying saucers from an alien species, so I'm pretty okay with that. And it's just like, well, damn, man. Like, he's like reiterating this over and over. A few people have said that it was maybe, misquoted from that documentary where you've got the recording. But here's Exler on the news a few different times reiterating that Admiral Inman made him like absolutely confident and positive. So.
And Oxler seemed markedly more reasonable than a lot of UFO researchers. Like he himself was an aerospace engineer.
Yeah, he was a NASA guy. He was a NASA specialist, NASA, I think, at some point in his life. And again, very calm spoken, intellectual guy that was just being very matter of fact with it and just saying, well, no, I mean, from where I'm seeing, the Admiral essentially has convinced me that these are recovered vehicles that we're working on, and you know.
And there's no way that you could be mistaken and it could have been an airplane, helicopter, or something of that nature?
Well, Admiral Inman convinced me that these vehicles were not manufactured by human technology, so that's pretty conclusive for me.
That's it. So, again, I think it's true. I wouldn't even go against the idea that there's been some archaeological finds from, like, you know, the old world. I mean, diving into prehistory right now and getting into that, seeing so many anomalies that are so advanced and so contradictory to our models. You think about things like the Vimanas of ancient India and, like, you know, these stories that you have of flying chariots. It's like, okay, was there a golden age of aerospace before our history started?
Yeah.
Is some of that under the ground? I think even Grush talked about recoveries, right? The Italians recovered something back in the Mussolini days.
Like the magenta crap.
I think there's a case to be said for like archaeological finds as well.
I think so too. Well, it just feels somewhat arbitrary if UFO crashes only occurred 1947 and onwards because of nuclear.
And only in New Mexico.
That feels like extremely anthropocentric or egocentric and nation-centric.
Right.
There's a whole field of forbidden archaeology, which you're kind of diving into, which all this megalithic architecture. And I wonder if UFOs, aliens, and crashes are a part of that. I don't know, and I don't have any evidence, but it wouldn't make sense to me that there would be this stark dividing line where it just starts in the atomic age.
Well, it kind of gets back to, like, you know, how do you want to look at aliens from the ancient perspective? You look at theologic texts like the Book of Enoch, the Watchers, or the Anunnaki, or the Nephilim, you know, the ones that came down and slept with the women of men and made these, like, you know, hybrid species. It's like, okay, a lot of different texts speak about this in variations, but there's kind of a similar theme of giant beings or some other type of being that came and interfaced with us. So that's kind of like how you might look at it from the ancient perspective, and you see some of these megalithic stone building sites all over the world. It's like, okay, humans aren't capable, at least from our understanding of history and capabilities at that time, we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So where does that? And especially, not to get off on a tangent, but with the ancient megalithic sites like Stonehenge or other parts of the world, it's not just the engineering, it's the alignment, it's astronomy, it's mathematics. Some of them are even acoustically tuned to produce strange effects from reverberation. So it's like, it's a complex set of knowledge that is then globally represented all over the world. And that says to me that there was someone who really knew what they were talking about with a lot of different areas of science and engineering and astronomy that was putting this together and then inspiring people to do it all over the world. So whether that's an interface with non-human intelligence or just a completely different variation of human intelligence that we've long forgotten, I don't know. But there's a profound mystery there.
There's something else. There's clearly the primitive to progress narrative that we're being spoon-fed by, like, Steven Pinker and, you know.
BS.
It's obviously BS. Yeah. That's, like, obviously wrong.
Yeah.
And you don't have to necessarily, you know, wholesale agree with Eric von Daniken to say that, like,
dude, even just taking like 1 foot off of the conventional path, you start going, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, this is not right.
Well, there's just no way some of this stuff could have been built. And so I think we have to, like, not necessarily cross the T or dot the I before, yeah, artificially, but like there's something going on.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That narrative is wrong.
And it's kind of like, you know, it's like polar opposites of the argument, like the mainstream who are very reductive and in their little refined channel. And then obviously on the polar opposite, you got people who are like, it was absolutely built by the Nephilim. Or right. Like, we don't know that, but
sure.
It's definitely a mystery. Like, yeah, it hasn't been addressed. It hasn't been satisfactorily put to the side. And there's so much of that, like whether it's history or, you know, the anomalies and UFOs, like that's why I kind of feel like they're cotangent. They are connected together.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of influence in, you know, the wheels of Ezekiel and these incredible visions that people have had throughout time. If they had it today, that would be a UFO experience.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That would just be part of the modern lore.
There's definitely a presence that's been here throughout time.
Yeah, I think so too. Another guy that you interviewed, John Ramirez.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat.
Super interesting guy, former CIA.
Yeah, GS-15.
GS-15. And he's come out now, and I think on your show as well, saying that like he's sure we have hybrid programs, yeah, human-alien hybrid programs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the word that Louis Elizondo can't say that everyone in the Pentagon is expecting him to say someday, is that we're all hybrids. Personally, I believe this is one of the core secrets. That's my personal opinion.
When you hear him say that, are you like, you know, this is legit, this is CIA disinfo, what's your...
Middle ground, man. Like, okay. Grain of salt. Like, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, take everything with a grain of salt. I all respect to John Ramirez, and I'm not applying this to him, but something that I've definitely felt over the years of, you know, being thrown into interfacing with people in the intelligence community is they're really good at becoming your friend.
Right.
When you've got an influential platform,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Really good at becoming your friend. And they're very likable and they're easy to become friends with. But, you know, again, it comes back to that thing of how much of this can be validated, how much of this has been evidenced. I'd say, you know, like 0.1%
right,
of that, right? So like,
right,
John Ramirez, super interesting guy. I think he's actually genuinely passionate about the subject,
yeah,
and he's an experiencer. Yeah. You know, you find a lot of these people in the agency, like within the CIA, you know, it seems to be a hallmark of like these guys who have got quite high up in the ranks of that particular agency is they've got like some weird ideas and
super
like, you know,
weird.
that's what they want, right? They want out of the box thinkers. So of course you're going to get people in these agencies that believe in all of that. But
you expect that will get you like,
bring Kurt in for a come on. Kurt Metzger, I'm a big fan of this guy, so I'm so happy he's here.
This is how I dress when I watch Jesse's show.
Oh, I love it, man. I can see that.
You're like a Templar.
Yeah.
Oh, that figures in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that figures in. That figures in.
It was funny. I met Eric Von Daniken, and I asked, you know, on all these things, he was like super like, you know, these crazy hand wavy theories.
Right.
And then I asked him about the Templars and he goes, there are secrets that I cannot talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, really? Eric Von Daniken? Like,
well, you know, like a little
word for little, have that antique shop.
Was that right? Eric Von Daniken has an antique,
yeah,
shop?
You know what's interesting about the Templars as well in respects to Egypt, just a little bit of quick trivia,
yeah,
is that the Great Pyramid of Giza, you know, it's eight-sided.
The Pyramid of Giza is eight-sided.
Very subtle, and
like
it can be seen. It can be seen from above.
Uh-huh.
But if you get an aerial of this at a certain point in time, you can actually see that instead of four sides, it's got these like indentations, uh-huh, that create an eight-sided pyramid.
Whoa!
The Templar flag is an eight-sided pyramid turned into a 2D shape. So
whoa,
if you take the Templar flag and you create it into a three-dimensional object, you get the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Wow.
Yes.
You've interviewed a guy who is the modern grandmaster.
I traveled
of the
through
Templar?
Egypt with him.
That's Timothy Hogan.
Timothy Hogan, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, you're plugged in.
Plugged in, yeah.
Well, with Sir Timothy Hogan.
I went, I was brought into the King's Chamber by him personally.
He's a real Templar.
He's a real Templar, yeah. Okay. He's got his receipts.
Well, got some, okay, well, that's disturbing.
but don't you guys think if they're real Templars today,
yeah,
they wouldn't like dress up,
yeah, no.
A like Kurt,
why wouldn't
or
they?
B like Timothy Hogan?
Well, I'm not.
They would be like, yeah, these like subtle.
Well, I mean, like it's like there's levels, right? Like
Egypto,
Kurt's at the bottom of the fucking barrel.
When are you doing your
there's Halloween course costume, yeah, level?
I'm Zawi Hawass. Did you watch Zawi?
Of course, I watched the supercut. I couldn't do the 3 hours.
It looked like
the
they were arguing over a carpet.
It was fucking insane.
Joe, that was probably the worst podcast he's ever done.
He was like, that was the worst fucking podcast.
And Zahi goes, at some point, he's bombing. Zahi's doing so badly. And then halfway in, he goes, I'm doing a speech in Houston.
Will you speak in Houston? Will you introduce me? He's like, fuck no.